welcome to the show. You know where you are, Expert Talk with me, Tego. And today, as always, we've got an amazing expert. I would actually say this guy is an authority at what he does. He's going to talk to you about businesses that you kind of put the training wheels on so you don't fall off. Now you're going, Tego, what does that mean? Tom Skarda's here today. He's going to talk to you about starting a business in a really fantastic way where you don't have to be out there by yourself. So sit right there. We'll be right back.
Expert Talk is brought to you in part by Pod Nation TV, the podcast to broadcast network. Expert Talk is produced and distributed by Melrose 11 LLC. Lights, cameras, take action with Melrose 11. Our special guest today is Tom Skarda. For more information about Tom or the Franchise Academy, visit thefranchiseacademy.com or follow Tom on social media at Tom Skarda.
Hey, Tom, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Teresa. It is an honor to be here.
It's an honor to have you, man. I had the privilege to just kind of talk to you for a few minutes a couple of weeks ago, and your story is fantastic. I'm so happy that you could come on and just share it, because you're a guy's guy. You know, you're originally from where?
I'm originally from Brooklyn, New York, born and raised.
See, I've watched all those movies about Brooklyn, New York. All of a sudden, I feel like I need to sit up a little straighter because Brooklyn don't play. And nowadays, let's just talk about for a second about Brooklyn. I mean, I'm originally from Chicago, and yep. Chicago has changed and changed and changed over the years. How has Brooklyn changed in the last 20 or 30 years? To me, it seems to be a whole new world.
It's, you know, it's some people call it the brave new world right now. It's interesting. My mom still lives in the same house I grew up in. So she's there 50 something years. And it's not the same Brooklyn that I remember as a kid and working in Manhattan. It was the Wild West back then. Now it was more kind of Disney-esque. Well, pre-pandemic anyway, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally know what you're saying. And right now you're not in Brooklyn, right? You're like in the Florida state, just enjoying the sunshine, making us all jealous.
Yeah, you know, kind of semi-retired, but still helping people all over the country.
You know, I want to tease people a little bit, because I said that saying that you say about a business with training wheels, and I know they're wondering if you own bikes or do bike sales. It has nothing to do with that. We'll get into that in a second. But you didn't start out as an entrepreneur. You actually did what little kids, my grandsons, are doing right now, sitting on the floor with a little model train, being an engineer, and you got to do this as a grown-up. What was that like?
Yeah, it was a blessing, I have to say. I was a New York City subway conductor, and I was there for 13 years. Absolutely loved it, you know, working in the belly of the beast, you know, moving more than 5 million people a day, being a cog in that wheel. It was really great. Met great people, both I work with and also just people on the train. I met tourists from all over the world. Just phenomenal. Just loved it.
So when you have a job like that, my dad, you know, rest his soul, he was a sharecropper as a child and then moved to Chicago and Gary, Indiana, and got a job in a steel mill. And literally started as a steel bender. He had burn marks all over his arms because back then there was no HEPA and all that. It was just like, get in there and bend that steel. So he, you know, worked his way all the way up to being an exclusive craneman. He helped build the Sears Tower. That was his story. He used to tell everybody, is, oh yeah, I helped build that. You know, story number 108 or something like that.
Right.
But when I was a kid, it was all about the union. You know, the union put food on your table. The union takes care of you. And he would never think about starting a business because he had a family and he was worried about that security. So why would you even think about leaving that comfort, as that my dad would say, of being in the union and actually branching out on your own?
Well, I look at the union as golden handcuffs because they really do help. And if it wasn't for the union, I wouldn't be able to probably do what I've done in my life. Uh-huh. And it's interesting. So I come from a very blue collar family. My father was a police officer and my mom, you know, just was a stay at home mom. Then she worked for the Board of Education. And my brother's a fireman as we speak in Manhattan.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, just that whole thing. My wife was a New York City police officer. But I was a conductor, and as I said, I loved working for transit. I loved working on the trains, my giant train set. I loved it, but it wasn't fulfilling my soul. And I was working one night, my days off were Tuesdays and Wednesdays, because that's the way it is when you start. And I had to work Sunday night on one particular train line that was local all day, you know, for the whole run, and it never came out of the ground. Where okay. Even in Chicago, the trains go up on the trestle.
Yeah.
Your line did not. And so you would get out of that and you know, at the end of the night, and you would blow your nose and like black soot would come out. They called it steel dust.
God.
The wheels that were grinding against the rails would form this dust and you would breathe it in. And I was feeling really down one particular Sunday, and it must have shown on my face because an old timer came up to me and he said, "Hey kid, this is a great job. You'll always have a shirt on your back. It'll never be a silk shirt, but at least you'll have a shirt." And I was like, "Whoa, wait a second. That sounds like mediocrity." And
wow.
When I looked around, I realized my bosses, whom I love and some I still talk to this day, they were not living the lifestyle I wanted to live, but business owners were. And also athletes and celebrities. But I was never going to be an athlete. I was never going to be, I wanted to be a rock star, but I was never going to, you know, I'm tone deaf.
Hey, you're a rock star in your business. You're a rock star in your business.
So I decided I wanted to get into business, but I didn't know how. You know, I didn't have a great education. I didn't come from money. Mm-hmm. But after going to seminars and reading a lot of books, I realized that a franchise business is a business with training wheels, which you were alluding to earlier.
Yeah.
And so what I mean by that is that they hold your hand from the very beginning, from the very first phone call. They will hold your hand, teach you the business, train you, continually train you. And then if you want to, either buy more or sell it. So back in 2000, I bought a smoothie franchise, and everybody thought I was crazy. Even my dad's like, "Who's gonna buy frozen drinks in the winter? What are you, a jerk?" And so, and your dad would probably say the same thing, I bet.
Yeah, my dad got invited to be in McDonald's when McDonald's started, and they came to the steel mill and said, "You know, you could invest X amount of dollars." It was like a paycheck. And my dad said, "Your mama makes really good hamburgers at home. What idiot's gonna do that?" And so many of his coworkers rejected it. A couple of them bought in. And today, you know, 50 plus years later, they own 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 McDonald's. And they're really, really well off. And, you know, he just, during business, whenever I think about a business decision, I think, what would my dad do? And I go the other way. But that's another story. But I totally can relate to what you're saying.
Right. And I feel the same way. And so I did the research. I understood what it took to do it, not mm-hmm. only financially, but mentally. And I wanted to really kind of control my own destiny. I wanted to, you know, have the infamous, you know, metaphorical silk shirt, which is, you know, I have many.
Probably hundreds of them. That's amazing. Now, before we get down the road, because I know people are going and I'm listening. I'm going to ask them. Just hold on a second. Okay. I know they're going franchises. I've always wanted to know how that works. We're going to get into how that works after the break. But before we get there, you know, I watch Law and Order I watch NYPD Blue and I read stories online and stuff. And it seems like if your family is in that business of first responder, be it medical, fire, or police, it's almost a given, especially for sons, that they're going to pick up the family business and they're going to be a cop or they're going to be a fireman or at least an EMT. So when you decided to become not an entrepreneur, I know that had to blow your family away. What? You're doing what? But even going into being, you know, working with a train system, what kind of response did you get from your family? You're leaving the family business, correct?
Yeah, in a way. And so what's really interesting is that my wife, and we've been married 33 years now, we met in the 80s, like in community college.
I just have to say, I have a vision of you in like hammer pants at a club right now, but never mind. Go ahead.
So what's really interesting is I went to high school with Marissa Tomei, the actress.
Wow.
And so if you think about her, that's kind of my wife, but in my cousin Vinny, you know, that blends.
Okay.
So her dad, her brother, her uncle, her three cousins, all were transit workers. They all worked in the subway.
Different.
So I kind of was making that kind of leap, I don't know, the step to transit. So it was a really great thing. But I also was really heavily involved in kind of that. This is an offshoot that you probably weren't going to expect me to bring up, but I was deeply involved with the kind of outlaw motorcycle underground when I was younger.
Wait a minute, what?
And so I belonged to a little motorcycle gang that ended up being absorbed by the Hells Angels in New York City. I couldn't make the cut. Look at me. All right, I couldn't do that.
Okay.
And so
you have a giant tattoo on your back that we don't know about? I mean,
I have some tattoos.
Wow.
See? That's a whole nother podcast.
Never judge a book by its cover.
Right, exactly. I'm the epitome of that. When I was working transit, a quick story, we were, every year we would have like a gathering, for family day, you know? Mm-hmm. And they decided one day they're going to have it at the beach in New York. And I was like, oh, this stinks because I'm going to have to like wear short sleeves. And I did. And my friend Kenny, I never forget, he's like, wait a second, you're like Clark Kent. You take off your shirt, you're a totally different guy. I'll never forget that.
That's an amazing story. You know, and I got to ask, because you were from Brooklyn, your family is still living there. You know, did they go through 9/11? Was your brother a fireman during all of that? And, you know, how did you make it through that? Because that's, you know, the whole country became a family when 9/11 happened. Yeah. And for years after that, the repercussions with the fire departments and losing friends and family and all that, how did they survive? Are they okay? And then everything with COVID. I mean, New York was in the news every day with COVID for almost a whole year. Right. How are they doing? Is everybody good?
Yeah, you know, believe it or not, everyone in my family survived. We do have friends and distant friends that were actually killed in 9/11. Mm. And you know, because it was right where we live. And so my brother-in-law actually was the chief of police for New York City at the time when it happened.
Wow.
And he doesn't talk about it. He's like, it's like when you talk to those old timers that were in Vietnam.
And World War II,
In World War II, they don't talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it is. He's a changed man, I can tell you. And he's an idol of mine, my brother-in-law. He's older than me. He's like the older brother I never had.
Mm-hmm.
And not good, not good.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, my wife, it was funny because that morning when it was all going down, you know, first plane hit, and I was talking to my dad. He was retired police officer, and we're on the phone, and we're like, oh my God, this is weird. It's so clear. How could the plane have hit this building? It doesn't make sense. And literally I'm watching and I saw the second plane go in and everybody's heart just dropped. I mean, you know, stories.
Yeah,
so
yeah. I think we'll always remember, if you were over the age of maybe 8, you're always going to remember where you were at, you know, at 9/11. And when I talk with somebody who is, you can tell, I mean, you and I have only talked a couple of times, but you can tell family's important. You know, it's one of the first things you bring up. And, you know, yeah, we're going to talk about business and hold on. We're going to talk about the whole franchise thing and what he does. But, you know, you can't just skip over the fact that, you know, this is a family that has been first responders for generations and they had to be there. You just can't skip that story and not at least ask, you know, how are they doing? You know, because a lot of people are not talking, you know, especially with COVID. We've kind of just kind of put a bow around 9/11 and set it over here because we're focusing on COVID and everything that's hit the whole country, the whole world, but especially New York and California have been hit pretty much the hardest. But you still got to look back and go, man, you know, because I know being prior military, there's stories that I'll never forget, things I saw that I'll never forget. My dad was in the military and during World War II times. And, you know, I didn't even know he was military until I was in my 30s because it was something he never talked about. And wow. Somebody brought it up casually at a funeral. They were like, man, I haven't seen you since da-da-da. And we were deployed. And I went, deployed? What are you, what? Who?
Wow.
You know, and he went, yeah, I don't talk about that. And he just skipped it, you know? Yeah. So I totally can understand that. You have, I mean, I'm looking behind you and every time you move your head, I'm like, what does that phrase say behind him? Ah, see, that's what I'm talking about. That's his heart right there. Here's a guy that truly, truly cares, that knows how to make money. You can tell that. He knows how to do this franchise thing. And when we come back from this break, we're gonna talk about that. But he also knows how to reach back, give a helping hand, and pay it forward. So sit right there. We'll be right back.
Our special guest today is Tom Scarda. For more information about Tom or the Franchise Academy, visit thefranchiseacademy.com or follow Tom on social media at Tom Scarda.
Hey everybody, you know where you are, expert talking. Today I'm talking to the authority about starting a business with, you know, training wheels on it. We're talking about franchises. Hey, Tom, let's talk about it. Let's talk about what is a franchise. Let's start there.
So this is so great. A lot of, you know, recent survey said 70% of Americans don't even know what a franchise is. So a franchise, the definition is buying a license and getting granted the rights to run a business in a defined territory. Okay. So McDonald's is the, like, or Subway restaurants are like most common, right? So you decide, hey, you want to buy a Subway. Subway's headquarters is in Connecticut. So you have to go through a process to learn about the business. They have to learn about you. And then if it's a good match, if it's a good marriage, they'll get married. And and so you pay a fee. They train you like heck to be a really great operator. And then they help you open up your store. And then they come to your store and they help train you more. And they help you with marketing and it's the training wheels. It's everything that you need, soup to nuts, things that you didn't know you needed, you know, they're supplying for you, they're helping you with. So that's kind of the definition of franchising in a quick nutshell.
But most people, you know, we saw the McDonald's movie, you know, we saw the founder, blah, blah, blah. We've seen, you know, McDonald's and Burger King and those kind of franchises. But there are actually franchises that are tiny, tiny type businesses. I mean, I've seen all kinds. There's franchises for blinds, to put blinds up, right? There's, like you said, you started in the smoothie industry. I saw one that was a painting business years and years ago. I don't even know if they're still around, you know? So how do you specialize in a certain kind of franchises when you're coaching? Or does somebody come to you and say, hey, Tom, I'm thinking about getting into franchises and you help them figure out what their niche is? What is it that you do as a franchise coach?
So the main thing is to help people figure out if franchising is really right for them or not. because it's really not for everyone. So it's important to understand what you're getting involved in. So many people approach it the wrong way. And they feel like, oh, I love to play tennis, so I'm going to buy something that has to do with tennis. Or I love dogs, so I should buy something like dog grooming. And that might be the good thing to do, but it very well, most likely, is not the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. So I back people up a little bit and just say, hey, well, let's learn about you. What are your skills? What are your goals? Where do you want to go with this business? People often say, well, what's the best franchise out there? That doesn't matter. What matters is what's the best franchise for you.
For you. Mm-hmm.
So we help people figure out really re-engineering the process. So I take them through a process where I help them to identify really what they enjoy doing for work. What do they really love? Do you like talking to people, or do you like being in the back office? You know, do you like to do marketing? Do you really enjoy working with your hands? There's all these little things. And then, like, do you have family? If you're a young family, perhaps you don't want something that goes and works on the weekends or at night.
Right.
So we build this model and say, okay, so here's T Joe, right? So T really wants something that is going to be a low investment, something that has high margins, something that's Amazon resistant, something that's, I don't know, pandemic resistant. And so we help build that model. Then we use the model that we literally write up, and we sift through 4,000 franchises in 90 different industries, come back with a short list of companies that have exactly what that person is looking for, fitted to a T. And because of that, it gives them so much more room for success, as opposed to getting into something and then realizing, wow, I didn't realize that was going to cost like all this money, and I was going to have to work nights and really make half of what I made in my job. Mm-hmm. So we help people avoid those mistakes. That's kind of, and it's a mission. It's like a ministry for me. I just really want to help people not make mistakes, because I made mistakes. So we could talk about that too.
This brings up all kinds of questions. One question that I have is, you know, is there a certain education requirement if you want to be in a franchise, you know? And what if somebody has a great quote unquote franchise idea and they want to create a franchise? Is that something you can coach them through too?
Yeah. So let's go to the first question. So okay. The there is no criteria for being a great franchise owner.
Okay.
The criteria is you have to be coachable, because they will train you. You got to have the money to invest, which is, there's a misnomer that people feel like, oh, I need $1 million. You don't. And today, as we speak, banks are throwing money at people to open up businesses because it creates jobs. Every time you open a franchise, it creates 10 to 20 jobs in the community. So right. You're becoming an economic engine in the community, which is fantastic. And so... As an example, if you have a haircutter's license, if you're a beautician, you will not be granted a franchise license for like a hair cutting franchise, like Supercuts or Great Clips or something like that. And it's counterintuitive, I know, but what they don't want to happen is for you to come in with your baggage of, oh, this is how things are done.
Yeah.
Right. And then, you know, you're in that business. Let's say, you know, you're in it for a year and Julie calls in sick. And you're like, no big deal, I'll cut heads. Then you're like, hey, I just saved a whole bunch of money. Maybe I don't need Julie.
Uh-huh.
And now you just bought yourself a job.
Right.
And
exactly.
That's not what you want.
Exactly. Exactly. So how do you know when you get into one, right? Because you've had many. So you get into one. Like I was saying, some of the people with my dad at the steel mill, now their family owns 10 or 12 or whatever, McDonald's. How do you know when it's time, you know, to maybe move on and sell or buy the next one? So now you've got the north location and the south location.
So it's really a personal choice. So if you're in the business, and by the way, usually there is an agreement, you've signed a franchise agreement that is good for a certain amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
So average, it's 10 years across franchising. So as you're approaching your 10 years, you might be saying to yourself, hey, do I want to do this again for another 10 years? Or do I want to cash out and move to Hawaii or Jamaica?
Right.
Right. So this, so it's all a personal decision about what you want to do. You might want to cash out and retire, or you might want to pass it down to your children. Because over the past 10 years, your 10-year-old is now 20 years old. And they've been working in the business because you made them and you taught them how to do business. Mm-hmm. And so you might pass it down. So there's different options like that. And it's all personal decisions. Typically, if you want to sell in a franchise, it's much easier. As long as the franchise is running well, usually a local franchisee in the market will buy it because they already know the business and they'll just add it onto their portfolio.
Yeah, that would make sense. And before we get back to the other question, I've got to ask, you know, you're a coach. Do you coach the starter part of this? Or are you a part of their lives, if they choose to be their coach throughout this process, you know, 3 years down the road, you're still being the person they bounce things off of? Where exactly do you fit in the system?
Yeah, so I take them from day one all the way through. When they buy a franchise, our relationship doesn't end. Although the franchisor is now helping them with everything, I'm always in contact. I try to talk to people once a quarter. Mm-hmm. And I'm just kind of the sounding board. They might say, hey, I'm looking at two different properties. You know, this is this one, this is this one. What do you think, you know, from the outside? And so I'll give my, you know, 2 cents on that. Or they might say, hey, my 10 years is up. What should I do? You know, I've had those conversations too, because I've been doing this for 16 years. So people have gone through the whole cycle.
You might know a few things after 16 years. I'm just thinking that out loud.
A little bit.
So when they call you, you know, you already have them in a set system. Like with my coaching clients, I had them in a set system. And like you say, you talk to them every couple of months or something like that. But if somebody calls you and says, hey man, you know, I started a franchise 10 years ago. And I fell on my face because I didn't pick the right one. It wasn't a fit for me. I thought I knew everything and I didn't listen. And now I want to do it again, but I want to make sure I make the right start. What do you tell them the first thing they have to do before they even think about starting another franchise?
They have to assess their skills. What do they enjoy? That's the very first step. You have to really know what you're made of. Because it's like, you know, I owned two franchises. One was the smoothie franchise. And then I owned another franchise, which was a food franchise. It was a store where you come and make meals following our recipes.
Okay.
You make them in bulk. You take them home. You freeze them on days when you're busy. You could throw something in the oven. And instead of ordering in pizza again.
I need that now.
It was a really great concept, but it didn't work. And it didn't work for me especially.
Okay.
And that's because I didn't talk to anybody. We just fell in love with this concept. I didn't talk to a franchise consultant. I just bought it almost sight unseen. Mm-hmm. And started off with a bang, but within 2 years, we were almost lost our entire life savings on that franchise.
Oh my gosh.
And so I wrote a book about it called Franchise Savvy. And so it's kind of my stories, but I look at it now as a blessing. Back then I was crying, but now I look at it as a blessing, as something that, you know, now I can talk to somebody and say, hey, listen, when I say something, it's not because I read it in a book. It's I've been there.
You actually lived it. And that was where I was going next, is that you are an author. You have written, you know, and what made you decide to go down that path? What made you decide to just put it, pen to paper and get it out?
Well, the very first book I wrote is something called The Magic of Choosing Uncertainty. How to Embrace Fear and Live a Fulfilled Life. And that I wrote that because as I work with people looking at franchises, we go through a whole process. It takes a month to 6 weeks to really do the due diligence properly. And at the end of the 6 weeks, they freeze and they walk away and they don't buy the franchise. And I tell people, your choice here is not the choice between franchise A or franchise B. Your choice is the choice between uncertainty over unhappiness.
Ooh.
Most people choose unhappiness and they stick with the really bad job, the long commute, traveling, all the nonsense, and they don't take a risk on themselves. And the funny thing is when you do take a risk, that's where the magic happens.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I totally agree with that. I totally agree with that. Now, I know somebody's out there looking at us and they're going, wait a minute, you asked a question he didn't answer. What happened to that question? So let's go back. Let's answer the question of, I got a great idea for a franchise. How do I start my own?
All right. So I could definitely point in the right direction. That's not what I do for a living, but I got some great people. What you need, like everything in life these days, is a lawyer. You need a good franchise attorney, and you have to write up these documents. So franchising is very heavily regulated by the Federal Trade Commission, and they mandate that you have what's called a franchise disclosure document. And okay. In that document, you have to disclose all this information to make the company really transparent for the buyer. So to get that done is going to cost somewhere between $50,000 and $100,000 just to get the legal work done.
Wow.
Once you get it done, then you have to go find people to buy the franchise. So you have to invest a lot in marketing and advertising. But my personal feeling is you really need to, you know, you got your great idea, open up a second unit and let your brother-in-law run it to figure out how to handle it when you're not there. So when he or she calls you and says, hey, I ran out of grape juice, what do I do? You know, you have the answer. Or, you know, the stove is not lighting up. What's going on? The alarm is going off, you know? Mm-hmm. And so you have to write down all the processes and the procedures on how to run that business. And that's what really makes a great franchise. And so there's, other than that, the way you sell franchises, there's no laws or regulations that say who could franchise or who can't. Anybody could franchise. And that's the dangerous part. So it's kind of buyer beware. So when you hear this great concept that just opened up, you're like, oh my God, I love it. I want to own one. There's, you know, you don't know if they make money really, or if they really know how to support their franchisees. That's where we come in. We pre-screen the franchises before we work with them.
So if you weren't doing this, if you weren't told the silk shirt story and changed your life, what do you think you'd be doing right now? I mean, what do you love to do, whether you get paid for it or not?
Oh my goodness, that's a great question. It would be something to do with old Harley-Davidson motorcycles.
I knew he was gonna go back to bikes. You see how I got you to go back to bikes? I'm a writer as well. I rode I started riding in the Philippines when I was in the Navy. And I've kept my motorcycle license. I'm actually planning on buying a trike, because I've got artificial knees thanks to the Navy. So me being up one of any kind of horsepower, not on these knees. So I will be doing a trike next, but I knew you were going to say that. I'm like, how do I get him back over there? You know, with his hair, with the wind going through his hair.
Since you brought that up, I'll just say this. I wrote an article, and I'm trying to write a book about the five business lessons I learned from being in an outlaw motorcycle gang.
See, now
I don't think anybody's done
security
that.
Or something. Yeah, because somebody's going to come and get you for telling the secrets. But I want to read it, so definitely write it. Go ahead, write it. You are amazing, sir. I love talking to you. You and I can just chat. It was like old home week the first time we talked. And I know you have a podcast. Can you tell us a little bit about your podcast, when they can listen to it, what it's about?
Yeah, so the name of my company is called the Franchise Academy. And I have the Franchise Academy podcast. And that's available on everywhere their podcast could be listened. So, you know, Apple Podcasts and Pandora and iHeartRadio is all on all that stuff. And prior to this, it was actually a radio show before it was a podcast. So there's a lot of episodes that go way back. Some have video, some don't. So there's that. If you just go to thefranchiseacademy.com, or it's my name, actually, it's tomscarta.com. It's the same website. My books are on there, my podcast. And also I just released a new online course. It's a masterclass on how to buy a franchise. So if you're like, hey, I don't want to talk to this Brooklyn guy, you could buy the course and you could actually do the whole thing by yourself on your own. I teach you everything that course that I've ever learned about franchising.
Ah, see, I didn't even know about that. He's dropping little secrets and little pieces of knowledge. Well, we are going to drop that. We had it going on the bottom third so people can find you and know where to go. I know I'm going to ask you to come back, because you're letting out the secret. I mean, other than what we see in like Entrepreneur Magazine or you know, we see the little note on the wall at the subway. If you'd like to own a franchise, call this number. That's about all we know about being in the business of franchises. So I know we touched maybe this much of the tip of the iceberg, and I would love to have you come back on and talk. Maybe we can do a Q&A session or something. You, sir, are fantastic.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, Tejo. And I got to say that my message really is, I'm a regular guy. I mean, if I could do it, you could do it too. If you're listening to this or watching this show, this is really something that people need to understand. It doesn't take a special person. You just have to be coachable. We could get your money. There's financing available. There's all sorts of great things. SBA, Small Business Administration, is on it right now. There's a lot of things going on. So do it.
Wow. Fantastic. I thank you so much for being on the show. And I sure hope you'll come back often, because I'm learning a lot and I'm sitting here going, man, maybe we need to be in the franchise. Now, what kind of franchise would I want? See what you're doing to me? My business partners are probably going, oh no, that's not where we're going today. I thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Hey, everybody. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I hope we answered a little bit of your questions. Make sure you reach out to Tom. We've been floating his web address along throughout the episode so you can get an idea of how to reach out to him, what to ask, da, 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 da. Now, you know how I am. Don't call this man and ask him something crazy. Be ready, because he's ready. If you want help in franchising, you want to understand it, Tom's got your back. I hope you enjoyed the episode. I hope you'll be back here next week. And as always, I'm Tego, and I'll talk to you next time.